Hi, this is Christopher Perrin with Inside Classical Education. On this podcast program, I interview a variety of leaders, administrators, and educators on topics relating to classical Christian education and its ongoing recovery and renewal in the 21st century. Archives of previous interviews can be found at our blog and podcast site at www.insideclassicaled.com. Well, Ken Myers, thank you very much for making some time for this interview.
Looking forward to it.
We are talking with Ken Myers, who is the founder, the proprietor of Mars Hill Audio. I suppose in the early days, you called your company Mars Hill Tapes, but had to change that with advancing technology.
Yeah, the company was always Mars Hill Audio, and we had to change the product to the Mars Hill Audio Journal. And because we realized that Mars Hill Tapes was no longer true. So I think volume 102 was the last one we did. And it's mainly because we had fewer than 200 subscribers on tape that were getting it on tape. And the quality of audio cassettes has really dropped as they're just not common. It used to be, you know, you'd have four or five different levels of quality of tape, and we'd always get somewhere above the middle grade. Now it's like one grade, so the quality's bad. And there's only one company in the country that's actually doing audio duplication on cassette now that we could find. And so it just didn't make sense for we. Staff here has been hoping to cut that for a while. But so the tapes sadly are a thing of the past.
What percentage of your subscribers get the MP3 download?
It's about half and half right now. Yeah, it's almost half and half. I just looked at some circulation numbers recently. And so we are a little bit concerned that people who get the MP3 subscription download the files. Well, assuming they remember to download the files, sometimes they forget. Once they download them, they're sitting on a hard drive or on a audio player somewhere, and people forget that they have them. And so they don't listen to them. And this is, you know, I often say that one of the major things I'm fighting is Gnosticism. The physical presence of a CD or a cassette is a kind of claim made on you to go ahead and listen to it. So we're trying to figure out how to work against that tendency, out of sight, out of mind. It's a versatile format for us because of the fact that it enables us to produce things that might not have as big an audience. With CDs or cassettes, you need a threshold of a number of people to make it worth getting the duplication done. With MP3s, we can produce things that have perhaps a smaller audience, but it's advantageous for us.
Well, Ken, when did you first get the idea to start Mars Hill Audio or something like it?
Well, it grows out of experience I had as an editor of a Christian magazine. 1984, I started working as editor of a monthly magazine called Eternity that had been around for 30 or 40 years. And it had dealt with cultural issues, but while I was there, I was asked to refocus the magazine editorial and come up with a vision for defining the magazine very clearly. And I said, rather than dealing with all the sorts of things Christian readers might be interested in, like Sunday school curriculum or how pastors' wives make their way in the life of a congregation, or and social and cultural issues. I said, let's really focus on the concerns of being Christians in contemporary culture. The board of directors liked that assumption. They liked that model for a magazine, and I wanted to make it into something like a Christian Harper's or Atlantic Monthly. We did that, and it turned out, having done it, the board of directors didn't like it. They said there weren't enough Bible verses in it. They wanted, and it took me a while to figure out what was missing for them and what was missing. I think they still weren't convinced that we could think about culture Christianly. They thought that you talked about cultural issues as object lessons to make some religious truth or theological point. But the idea of actually understanding culture as culture, not just culture as a kind of a lesson for spirituality, that was something they didn't quite understand. So once they told me they didn't like it, within 4 months I quit and spent the next 7 years trying to figure out how to start a new magazine. I wanted to start another magazine. About halfway into that period, I realized that perhaps there was a possibility of doing something in audio. I'd worked prior to that magazine, I'd worked at National Public Radio for 8 years and had a strong background in audio. The books on tape market was starting to take off in the early 90s. And I thought, I wonder if you could do an audio magazine on cassette tape then. That was the medium of choice. I actually had hoped to produce a radio program as a radio program that basically fed into an audio magazine. But what I wanted to do was too Christian for public radio and too smart for Christian radio, to put it bluntly. Christian radio stations were not interested. So I tried to get funding to produce such a show from many sources and just couldn't find the vision for it. So I ended up launching a narrow casting effort in 1992. We did the first pilot using interviews. Well, first of all, the idea is people don't have time to read yet one more thing. So at the time, this is before podcasts and before free audio, there wasn't a lot of time for people's, there wasn't a lot of competition for people's listening time. There were church sermons on cassette or lectures that you might get on cassette and audio books, but there wasn't that much competition. So I felt, well, 98% of our subscribers for the first 10 years or so, and probably even today, listen in the car. And so I figured, how can we capitalize on the driving time? And then the other thing is by, and this is the dark secret of our getting launched, I decided to interview authors of books rather than have commentary or, if you have a magazine published, you have to pay people to write articles. If you have an audio magazine, you can interview authors who've written a recent book for free and get basically content from them based on their recent research. So it was basically a way to put together a periodical with a really minimal editorial budget, but high content quality. The other thing is the conversations, I really do believe, I know this is true, that people will listen to a conversation on a subject that they might not take time to read an article about. And because of the fact that we lump 6 or 7 or 8 conversations together, I think, I know, again, that people have been introduced to subjects that they never would have thought to pursue an interest in on their own. And the conversation is friendly. It's you're listening in, you're not being lectured to, you're listening in on people talking intelligently about something that might be interesting. So that, I think, is, I realized that pretty early on that was a way to get some things on the table. Now, the reason I wanted to do this, that's the superficial story. The reason I wanted to do this is because I'd been persuaded for a long time, even before I started working at Eternity, that contemporary culture posed a lot of challenges to Christians that they weren't even aware of. There were, you know, culture wars sorts of concerns that Christians had about obvious moral issues. But even when I was in college, I began to realize that there were a lot of cultural dynamics that were challenging the church that weren't recognized as challenges, that were, I often say that a lot of Christians look at cultural disorder and they see it as a ministry opportunity rather than rather than something to resist. So I've been, that was something I was thinking about. And at Eternity Magazine, when I was trying to formulate an editorial vision, the problem of cultural accommodation, the problem of becoming assimilated to whatever status quo happens to be the case in contemporary American culture, seemed to me to be a big problem. So that, and that continues to motivate what I'm doing now. I mean, one way of summarizing what I've been doing is that modernity and its hyperactive spawn, postmodernity, pose some peculiar problems to Christians. Mm-hmm. And rather than the church trying to make good modern Christians, mm-hmm. I think the task of discipleship is to create Christians who are wise about the ways of the world and not captive to them. Mm-hmm. I break that down often into talking about specific large themes of modernity, like its tendency toward Gnosticism, for instance. Its tendency.
Would you define for our listeners Gnosticism?
Yeah, well, Gnosticism classically comes from the Greek word gnosis, meaning knowledge, and usually used to refer to movements beginning in the second or third or fourth century that were strongly influenced by Greek philosophy, characterized by a suspicion of the goodness of the material world, mm-hmm. and specifically a suspicion of the goodness of the body. It led to heresies concerning Christology. One of the earliest heresies to face the church is a heresy that claimed that Christ only appeared to have a physical body. Docetism, yeah. Dokeo, the verb meaning to appear, mm-hmm. I think. So there's this tendency throughout Christian history it seems to me Christianity and Judaism are unique among world religions in affirming the goodness of the body, the goodness of the material world. So there's always a temptation, and always has been a temptation within the church toward a kind of dualism that separates the body from the spirit, separates the material from the spiritual. As it happens, modernity, modern culture, through the influence of modern philosophy principally, reinforces that kind of dualism. Beginning with Descartes, we have the idea in the 17th century that knowledge... that we can acquire knowledge that's de-situated. That is, we can acquire knowledge that has nothing to do with our actual participation in a tradition, our actual participation in a community, our actual engagement with the world of the senses. Because the world of the senses, Descartes, like many of the Greeks, was nervous about the world of the senses because of the fact that the senses can deceive. And mm-hmm. so if we want certain knowledge, and this is one of the great quests of modern culture, we want certain knowledge, we have to eliminate sense perception because that's not a source of certainty. Anyway, there are lots of tendencies in modern culture toward regarding the body and the material world as... meaningless, as a problem to be overcome. I mean, a lot of our technology is dedicated to eliminating all of the limitations of the physical world. The idea that physical limits are a problem rather than a condition for flourishing mm-hmm. is a huge modern assumption. The internet is often celebrated by some of its enthusiasts as a way to eliminate the constraints of embodied life. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that Gnosticism is one of, I think that's one of the, I think it's a perennial challenge for the church, but I think it has some particular challenges for modern Christians to be aware of that. You know, let me take a step back for one second. I mean, theologically or biblically, I think you'd say the thing that drives me is the New Testament emphasis on not being conformed to the world. Worldliness was misunderstood by American fundamentalists, and hence their children and grandchildren, I think, have lost the kind of concern that is pretty strong in the scriptures about not being conformed to the world. James says that true religion consists of two things: caring for orphans and widows in their stress, and keeping oneself unstained by the world. Paul talks about the dangers of conformity to the world. In 1 John, we read that you can't love the Father and love the world. I mean, it's a constant theme throughout Scripture. And yet, I don't think that we're not living in a time when there is deep, ongoing, substantive reflection on what would constitute worldliness for us. So a lot of what I think we're doing with Marcel Audio is trying to define what our mission statement talks about. Our producing audio materials that help Christians think wisely and obediently about the cultural consequences of our duty to love God and neighbor, and that's that implies a corollary of that is that we have to do so in a way that's not captive to the spirit of the age.
Ken Myers on the history and mission of Mars Hill Audio. This interview has been conducted by Christopher Perrin for Inside Classical Education, which can be found on the web at insideclassicaled.com.